Welcome to the Pint and Click podcast. I'm Dave. I'm here with Jamie and Tony, as always. And today, we're going to recommend things that are good for the family or for groups of people. We're in the holiday season, and you're probably visiting or being visited by family and friends, and you want something to do. So we're going to talk about some board games, some video games, and some web tools that allow you to do that. We'll start with Jamie. Jamie, what are you going to talk about today?
Today I'll be talking about the game Codenames, and I first learned about it at the Pint and Click group we do once a month, and sometimes we do board game nights, and so someone brought the Codenames game. That was the first time I'd ever heard of it. And it came out in 2015, so it's relatively new. And I know some of my friends are obsessively in love with it, and others still haven't heard about it. So I thought it would be a good one, especially around the holidays when you might have big groups of people. Because this one you can play with kind of an unlimited amount of people. You're only limited by how loud it gets from people shouting over each other. But it's not like one of those games where you can only have four people or six people, and then people might be left out. And then the way it works is that it's kind of similar to Taboo or Catchphrase or one of those like word guessing games, but it's different in that there is a board, kind of. The way it works is there's a deck of cards that each have a different word on it, and they might be just words like ball or snow, simple one words like that, and each card will have a word on it, and you lay them out randomly in a grid, a 5x5 grid. So all these cards, each one with a word, will be out on the table, and you're divided into two teams. And each team has a leader or spy master. And the two spy masters from each team are sitting next to each other, and they get to see a little secret map that no one else gets to see. And the map is a 5x5 grid that corresponds to the grid of words on the table. And the map that only the spy masters can see is divided up so that some of the words belong to the red team, some belong to the blue team, and then some are just innocent bystanders, so they're neutral. And each spy master takes turns trying to get their teams to guess clues, which are the words on their table. So they'll have to give a clue that describes a word on the table. So if the word on the table, if one of them was the word snow, they might say something like winter. And then they try to get their team to guess the word snow on the table. But you want to get all your clues before the other team gets their clues. You want to give a one-word clue that corresponds to more than one answer, which is where things can get tricky. So if I was looking at the words on the table and I was a spy master, I might see that one word says book and one word says
library.
Says library or something. Yeah, and then I might say like reading two. And me saying the word two means that two words on the table go with the clue reading. And so I want my team to guess those two words. However, if they accidentally guess a word that belongs to the opposite team, then the opposite team will get that point. And one of the cards is also an assassin card. So if my team accidentally guesses a word that is secretly the assassin card, then my team loses. And so it's hard kind of to describe this visually, but in essence, you're trying to, with a one-word clue, get your team to guess as many words as possible on the 25 words that are on the table. And so if you want to go kind of conservative, you can just do one word that describes one clue very well, but then it'll just take longer to rack up your points. I always try to go big and try to give a clue that will bring like four different words together, but it always ends up that my team never knows what I'm talking about and ends up choosing the opposite teams as words and things like that. So this is not the greatest description, but it's really fun and it's pretty cheap too. It's like $13 or $14 on Amazon right now. Dave just informed me that there's a pictures version now, out now, where instead of the 25 cards on the table, you would have 25 pictures, and you try to give a clue that would describe more than one picture, which I think would be really interesting. And the decks come with enough words that you don't have the same words over and over again. And it's really fun. You can definitely find out which of your relatives are good at describing things and which are terrible. And if you like games like Taboo or Catchphrase or any word or verbal games, I think you would like this game. It's really fun and it's pretty easy to pick up, so you can learn it in like 5 or 10 minutes. And like I said, the teams can have as many people as you want because you're just guessing the clues that the their spy master is giving.
Yeah, I also want to point out, because I played Codenames at that tabletop meetup as well, and I really liked the aspect of, even if you have to leave the table for a minute, it's not like your team can't go on without you, because you make a decision as a team. So it's a very casual game, and it's good for groups, like big groups, like you were saying.
Yeah.
it's funny because how do you get like six people to agree on something? There's a rule in the game that says you have to press your finger on the choice that you make. Mm-hmm. That way it's very crystal clear what decision that team made. And then the spy master says yes or no, or gives a point to one team or the other.
And it's really easy to learn. It's not a gigantic rule book mm-hmm. with pages and pages of mm-hmm. rules to learn and mechanics to understand. It's just guessing words, which yeah. we've all done. We've all played games kind of like this before, but never exactly like this.
Yeah.
Another reason that Codenames is a good pickup is that it's at Walmart, it's at Target, so it's really easy to find. Mm-hmm. It's at Amazon. A game I'm going to describe a little later is much harder to find, but Codenames, we were at a wedding and we had nothing to do that night. I said, well, let's just buy a copy of Codenames because it's $20 yeah. on the shelf. So we went to the local Target, I think, and picked one up. Mm-hmm. So it's very inexpensive, mm-hmm. and you can get a lot of play out of it
yeah.
because there's so many words in that box. Mm-hmm. Even if you use the same words twice, it's going to be different because the map is going to be different the next time mm-hmm. you use some of those words.
Yeah. And the people you play with is always going to be different, too, so the dynamics are always fun to work with mm-hmm. and guess. There's always a lot of arguing and... You know, if people disagree on which card they think it is, that always gets to be fun as we get to see whose voice wins over. And it's a good one for families, too, because it's appropriate for all ages. Obviously, younger ones might need some more help if they don't understand what words mm-hmm. are. But as long as, you know, the spy master is maybe like third or fourth grader up or things like that, you know, mm-hmm. like younger kids still can play
yeah,
as long
absolutely.
As they can read. Mm-hmm. And they do have a new one. I forget what it's called, but it is like the adult version of Codenames. So it has more adult-related words. Mm-hmm. So if you're playing with all adults, that might be a fun one to pick up, kind of more like the Cards Against Humanity version of the Apples to Apples regular version. Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting twist on it. But yeah, I think it would cool. be a good one for the holidays when you have a bunch of people over and you want to do something that's fun but also kind of lazy. You mm-hmm. don't want to spend a lot of time thinking about something. It's a good one to do.
So that's Codenames. It's about $13 on Amazon, $20 at a retail store. It's everywhere right now, so it's really easy to find. And it's a cheap thing to do with, like you said, even a large group of people. Mm-hmm. Because I think the box might say like 2 to 8 or something yeah. like that. Who knows?
We played with like 10 people
sure,
on a team.
Sure.
You can do that.
One too. More person on a team isn't yeah. going to ruin the game. It makes it more fun, I would think.
yeah.
So I'm going to go next. I'm also going to talk about a board game. I'm going to talk about The Iron Throne, which is a Game of Thrones board game. And I'm a big fan of this game. It's based on a board game called Cosmic Encounter, which is decades old and a lot of fun, but I found a little bit frustrating in some ways. And this new Game of Thrones reskin called The Iron Throne is a much better and much more fun and much shorter game to play than Cosmic Encounter. So it's 3 to 5 players, very strict on the player count as opposed to Codenames. And each of you are a house from Game of Thrones. You're the Baratheons, you're the Starks, you're the Lannisters, something like that. And then within that, you have a leader. So your leader might be Jaime Lannister or it might be Cersei Lannister, depending on how the cards are dealt. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to gain influence over the other houses, either by having a fight, a hostile, you know, clashing of armies, or by having some sort of negotiation or even some sort of betrayal. Mm-hmm. And so what you do is you have a hand of cards and you'll play them in secret and then both cards will be revealed. And if it's a clash of armies, then whoever's army is strongest wins. If it's a truce, both sides play a truce card. Then you have a negotiation where you can trade things. You can mm-hmm. trade influence, you can trade power, which are these little tokens. If one person plays an army and another plays a truce, then it's a betrayal. And the army wins, but the truce player gains some prisoners from the winning player's house. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of terminology that's very evocative of mm-hmm. Game of Thrones because you're taking prisoners, you're maybe torturing them to gain certain effects, you're spreading influence, you're clashing in battles. And so basically, every turn, one person will be the aggressor, one person will be the defender, and you convince the other people at the table, well, you should be on my side, you should help me out. You and I will fight together against that person. The other person's like, no, you should help me defend, because we don't want the aggressor to score more influence points. So there's a lot of a negotiation. There's a lot of table talk. Mm-hmm. The book is very explicit about you can promise anything to anyone. Promises are not binding. That is a rule in the book. If I promise you, well, I'll help you out, but you help me out later, like, you can agree to that, but you don't have to follow up. And it is totally in line with the rules of this game. Compared to Cosmic Encounter, which is also a very fun game, this game is a lot shorter. They made a couple of changes. So in this game, characters can die. And when they die, then you can't use them as an aggressor anymore or a defender anymore. And when all your characters die, the game ends. If one person loses all their characters, the game ends.
Okay.
So that's a difference from Cosmic Encounter. And it just speeds up the game. Cosmic Encounter could go 2 hours, 3 hours, something like that. I've never played the Iron Throne for more than, you know, 80, 90 minutes, an hour and a half is the longest I've ever played. Mm-hmm. And it's actually short enough that we'll get through a game and then my wife will just say, let's play again. And then we all shrug our shoulders and we're like, yeah, let's play again. So if you like Game of Thrones, it's a lot of fun and it's fairly easy to learn. There's some other Game of Thrones games out there, but they are very complicated, very heavy, as the hobbyists like to say. I have a Game of Thrones game at home that has a rule book in it that I've tried 3 times to read through, and I just blank face, give up. I can't read these rules anymore. Not the Iron Throne. The Iron Throne is great. It's going to be a little bit harder to find. It's not at Walmart. It's not at Target. You might be able to find it at a Barnes & Noble. They usually have a hobby game section. But you'll definitely be able to find it online on like coolstuffinc.com, or maybe even Amazon has it by now. So that one you got to search for, but it's a lot of fun, I promise. It's simply called Game of Thrones, The Iron Throne.
I have 2 questions. Mm-hmm. One, what is the lower age range for this? Like, how old do you have to be able to?
I think the box says 13 and up.
Okay.
13 or 14. I think that'd be right to, because you really got to know what you're doing when you play your card face down. If you were younger than that, you might want to play like teams, like a child and a parent team up together to play.
Okay.
I think a 14-year-old could easily grasp the concepts of this game. And even younger, depending on the child, could probably understand it as well.
And do you have to have any knowledge of Game of Thrones at all?
No, not at all. It just makes it more fun to say, you know, Jamie Lannister, I killed Jamie Lannister, or I've taken Cersei hostage. You know, that makes it a lot more fun, but it's not essential at all to the game.
Very cool.
So that's The Iron Throne, simply called The Iron Throne. It's a Game of Thrones game. It's from Fantasy Flight Games. I think it lists for about $50. You can get it on Amazon for probably about $40, something like that.
I mean, you introduced me to Captain Sonar, so I'll definitely look at this seriously because we had a great time with that one.
Yeah, this one's a lot of fun. It's 3 to 5, which is a little strict, 3 to 5 players. So you can't play with just 2 because you got to have that bargaining with the third player there. Are you going to help the aggressor or are you going to help the defender? But it's a lot of fun.
I think that would be really fun with people you know really well that you don't care about, like, you know, screwing over or double-crossing or things like that. That could be really fun.
All right. So that's The Iron Throne. That's my contribution. Tony's up next. Tony, what do you have to talk about?
Yeah. I'm sharing about Mario Maker, which is recently released on Nintendo 3DS, but has been out for about a year or over a year now on Nintendo Wii U. And I just never bought a copy of this. But now I'm kind of regretting that I haven't had it for a year because it is like the perfect party game in a lot of ways for people, a group of friends, family. I've always been a fan of everybody gets a controller in their hand and plays synchronously. But this is more of the type of game where if you're playing it as a party game or if you just have people around, you can hand the controller, which is on the Wii U, it's got its own screen. So you can turn off the TV and kind of secretly craft a level in a group of people, and then you can hand it around and have people test it out. I mean, it was a lot of fun because we just said, hey, let's kind of turn this into a party game. Let's see if anyone can make it through this level, you know? And I guess the cool thing about Mario Maker is you start out with just kind of like a blank canvas, and you can make, you get all the tools that, well, starting out, you don't get all the tools, but you have at your disposal the ability to kind of create any Mario level that your brain can think up. And you can make monsters bigger. You can make put wings on anything. You can basically take that vocabulary of 30 years of Mario games on Nintendo. And just there's just so many interchangeable tools. And I think with that restriction of it just being Mario gives you kind of such a freedom to create such wacky and strange and weird levels that, like, challenge you and that kind of push creativity to the forefront. So in a way, it's the type of joy that, like, creating a level like this is the kind of the type of thing where, like, I would love to see people that don't ordinarily play games try. Like, mm-hmm. I really want to bring this to, like, that thing and see if, like, my uncle can challenge his kids or something, you know? And just because it's really simple at its core. I mean, you're literally painting shapes on a screen and then having this Mario figure jump through them and jump through the gauntlet. So I played with some friends over the weekend, and we were yelling and screaming at the television because most of the time it was like an impossibly hard, challenging map mm-hmm. that you just had to try over and over and over again to see if you could advance through. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
When you say painting shapes, are you physically like drawing them? Because in my head when you were explaining this, I was mm-hmm. picturing more of like a drag and drop kind of a thing where they mm-hmm. have...
I guess it is kind of drag and drop, but okay. It's kind of like you work from a palette, but then the controller also has a stylus. So you grab the stylus and you're painting right on the screen. So you choose like a block or a monster
okay.
and you can click and drag and create like 20 monsters or okay. you can just create the one. And if you want to make it bigger, there's like ways to like okay. you drag a mushroom onto it and it gets bigger and things like that. And the neat thing is it can be a spectator sport. Like, if you want someone to watch you build the level, like, it's reflected on the big TV, too.
Okay.
So it shows, like, a person's hand and where the stylus is going, and you just see them drawing. And it makes actually really cool noise that's playing along with, like, the soundtrack. It's kind of a really fascinating way they made, like, an editor tool so fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a feat of software design in some ways.
Yeah, it's like every time you click a thing, it plays a note in the song or something like mm-hmm. that. So if you do it really fast, you can actually hear the song playing.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
So the sound effects actually become the music while you're creating a level.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you click over to play the level, the actual music kicks in. Another thing that's great about it is that just it's super easy to switch back and forth between create and play. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All you do is click a button and suddenly you're playing. Mm-hmm. And if you try something and it doesn't work, click back to edit and fix it, click back to play, try mm-hmm. again. Mm-hmm. There's no loading screens involved
yeah. okay.
going between the two different modes.
Mm-hmm. So it lets you like test it and make sure it's actually beatable, you know, because mm-hmm. you don't want someone to have to try it and it's completely mm-hmm. impossible or whatever, so...
Is there a leaderboard, or do you, like, rate other people's levels, or is there, like, you know, oh, this person's self-created level is the best one that mm-hmm. people say?
I actually haven't experimented with the online functionality at all. I know Dave has.
So there you can share levels online.
Mm-hmm.
You can upload your levels, and you can download other people's mm-hmm. levels. You can like a level if you mm-hmm. want. So just, you know, click one button, give it a point.
Uh-huh.
And then you can look at, you know, the top 10 liked this week levels,
okay.
or top 10 of all time mm-hmm. levels. So there is a leaderboard, but there's also just, you can play a mode, like, give me 8 random levels.
Okay.
And let me play them in a row and see mm-hmm. if I can beat them. And that's a lot of fun, too.
Mm-hmm. When you create something, do you say how difficult it is? You know, is this like a world 1-1 level, or is this, you know, like a...
Not really. You can name it
okay.
so whatever you want, so you can say in the name how hard it is,
uh-huh.
but there's no requirement. The only requirement is before you upload it, you have to beat it yourself.
Okay.
So you
can't be so impossible.
You can't make something broken. You can't make something where you go all the way through the level and then the flagpole is surrounded by bricks.
Yeah. Like
you have to be able to complete the level before you upload it, which is a chore sometimes for the levels I've made. We've done a thing, not quite a party atmosphere, but I guess so, where we'll have my brother and my cousin over and some friends maybe, and we're mm-hmm. watching football, and my brother doesn't like football. So he sits in the corner, and he makes a whole bunch of levels, and then at halftime, we all have to play them.
That's really fun. Yeah.
So he gets to sit in the corner and play his game, which he likes. We get mm-hmm. to watch football, which we like. And then all of a sudden, he's like, all right, Matt, I made this one for you. You have to play this level.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty neat.
Mm-hmm.
Like a communal experience like that, where you're not necessarily even watching the level be created,
mm-hmm.
but just like all of a sudden there's 4 new levels that have been generated just for us.
Is there a time length?
There's a minimum and a maximum length of the level,
okay.
like how many bricks long it mm-hmm. is. There's also a timer, but it's pretty generous. It goes as high as 10 minutes, I think,
okay.
so you mm-hmm. don't really have to worry about mm-hmm. You can set that to be lower or higher if you mm-hmm. only want a 200-second level. You can do that instead of a 600-second mm-hmm. level. So that's entirely up to you. But mm-hmm. if you don't care, you can just set it to 10 minutes, and that should be long enough for anyone to complete a
okay.
level. But otherwise, it's Mario and everything you'd hope about Mario. You can go down pipes and into the underworld and come back up.
Oh, yeah. And if you don't like the classic, like, 8-bit Mario, mm-hmm. that's if it's too blocky for you, you can always change it to, like, the modern graphics
okay.
3D world Mario. It's always side-scrolling in mm-hmm. two dimensions, but it changes the whole graphical look. You can make it look like a Super Nintendo or whatever, you know.
Can you lump ones together into like a world, like, oh, like four or five levels are this world, so you can set up your own whole game, kind of?
Yep. The save screen is actually designed like that, where there's, I don't know, 12 worlds or 16 worlds, and then each one is four levels long.
Okay.
And then you can string them together. That's on the local saves. That's not quite when you're uploading and downloading on the internet.
Okay.
Then it's usually either one level at a time or just eight levels at a time, something like that, depending on what mode you play.
Okay. And again, what would the age range be, the lower end?
Yeah, I mean, I could imagine anyone really picking this up and getting it. I mean, a lot of the, even the interface is like designed in a playful way, like to clear the screen, you have to hit the rocket ship so it explodes everything. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I would say like even if you were like 6 to 8, you could probably play the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
grade school.
Yeah,
like anyone who can play a regular like
5 or 6 years old could definitely play the game because it's Mario.
Yeah,
you know, I played Mario at 6 years old.
Yeah,
and then making a level is super easy. Mm-hmm. Maybe you need a little bit more awareness of what's going on to make a good level or a bad level. Uh-huh. But if you just want to drag Goombas onto the screen and then have a screen full of Goombas, a 5 year old could do that and have a lot of fun.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's $60 for the Wii U. It's probably about $40 for the Nintendo DS. Yeah, I guess I was waiting for the price to go down or something, but it never does when it's like a really high quality Nintendo game. They usually stay up. So, but you can get it from the library, and that's how I finally played it.
All right.
Yeah, so that's Super Mario Maker for Wii U. There's also one for 3DS. It doesn't have the online capabilities where you can upload and download things. Mm-hmm. The Wii U one is really the version that you want, but the 3DS one is not bad. And that should be, again, available at stores nearby. Amazon, of course, and Walmart and Target and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Or we have it here on the shelf at the library, hopefully, if someone hasn't checked it out already. So we'll move on to our group discussion, which is about BoardGameArena.com and some related web apps, websites. This is a little different. This is not necessarily for groups of people all around a table. This is if you want to play board games online with your friends and your family and things like that. So let's talk about BoardGameArena.com first. It's a website, and you can log in, create an account. You can friend your friends and your family so that you can find them, and then you just play a board game. It's super easy to log into a game. There's quite a selection of games to choose from. And the interface is a little tricky, I found. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's a little confusing. Mm-hmm. But if you want to play a board game online, almost always for free, you can't beat it. So what have our experiences been with Board Game Arena?
I played with my sisters. One of them is in Champaign right now at school, and one of them is in Minneapolis, and we love playing games. And one of our favorite games is Takenoko, which is by, I think, the same people who did Seven Wonders. No, I'm not sure. But it's one of our favorite games in real life. We own it, and we always play it at Christmas time. So I was excited to see that it was on Board Game Arena, too. So we played it, and it was fun. And we did it while we had a Google Video Hangout going on at the same time. So even though I couldn't really see them because I was on the Board Game Arena screen, I could hear them talking as we played. And the interface, like you said, was a little confusing at first. I couldn't figure out how to start a game or if I was in a game or what was going on at the beginning. Luckily, my younger sister figured it out and, like, invited me, so we got in. And playing the game is really helpful, I think, because they have the instructions for different parts of it on the side, whereas I would be flipping through an instruction booklet if I forgot one rule of the game while playing in real life. Here, by every different piece or card, it had a little box that said what this one does or what this one does. So it made the playing a lot quicker because, especially in a lot of Euro-style games, there might be a bunch of different cards that do different things. And it's nice to have that information on the screen to figure out what you can do. The thing that I didn't like about it was that the game Takenoko is beautiful because of its art. And on the screen, everything is really small and pixelated. And it was, I think you lose that tactile quality. And my youngest sister, who really likes playing just video games, she was saying, if I wanted to play a game on the computer, I'm going to play an actual computer game, not like a game that's meant to be played as a board game on the computer. So she wasn't that into it. My other sister and I liked it a lot more because, yeah, it's not the same thing as a real board game, but if we're all in three different cities, this is, like, better than nothing. And it was still fun. I think the game that we played is not the most conducive to the kind that's fun to play online, because so much of what went into it is how things are designed and shaped.
Yeah.
But being able to yell with my sisters and hear their voices and things and, you know, argue about who gets to go when and things like that was fun. Mm-hmm. So I enjoyed it in that part of it. I think it would be fun if we played a different game, but that was the only game on there that we all knew how to play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was surprised at the number of games that were on there that I did not know.
Exactly.
And that are free and open to just click. And actually, because of like what you were saying, like the rules being so readily available, mm-hmm. Dave and I tried Hanabi, and learning it was really simple because you can't, like if there's an illegal move, you can't really make it.
Mm-hmm.
There's only legal moves that let you, you know. So the software is built intelligently.
Yeah, to make it easy for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They also have like videos there just to educate you. If you don't want to try it, but you just want to dabble and see, hey, this looks cool. Mm-hmm. I want to see more about it. And it's all right, kind of available.
And I liked that it lets you sit in on games and just watch other people play games. Mm. The game Love Letters I played once at Pint and Click, mm-hmm. but I kind of forgot how to play. Mm-hmm. So I was watching other people play games. And I was like, oh, now that I can see how the turn order goes and what they do, that helped me a lot. So I think even if you're trying to learn a game that you're not going to play mm-hmm. on Board Game Arena, just a regular board game, it might be helpful to watch it mm-hmm. being played.
Yeah, it's definitely great for learning because, as we've mentioned, the rules are there. Sometimes they have links to the actual rule book in a PDF. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they have links to YouTube videos. You can't really make a mistake. Like I played Stone Age with some friends, and I haven't played Stone Age in 3 or 4 years. I don't know how mm-hmm. long. And then like it took me like a round or two to figure it mm-hmm. out. And then all of a sudden I was just playing again, and it made sense. I didn't have to reread a rule book.
Yeah.
I didn't mm-hmm. have to watch a 30-minute video. It just took a couple of, why can't I click this? Oh, well, that's right. Now I remember. And then mm-hmm. I was playing a board game. Like there was not a lot of downtime before the board game started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because if you click the wrong thing, it tells you, like, you can't do that action mm-hmm. or something, and it'll direct you towards what you can do. So
yeah. Maybe this is kind of obvious, but I like how it's not a typical gaming site on the internet. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not filled with ads or anything mm-hmm. that's, like, obnoxious. You know, mm-hmm. it's not going to force you to pay or remind you to pay mm-hmm. every 10 minutes or something like that. You know, it's a very lean, even though maybe the interface is confusing at first, I think once you know it, you're probably mm-hmm. feel comfortable with exploring, continuing to go back there. Like, it's a very good learning resource. It feels more like a institutional.org than a for-profit site or something, mm-hmm. you know. Like, it wants to get you playing games, not just buying things.
And it's largely free. Most games are free. You just go and play for free, and there's nothing to it. A couple of games are premium games, and someone has to subscribe for that. But even that's like $4 a month, and it only has to be the person who starts the game.
Mm-hmm.
So in my group of friends, we have one person who's, I'll pay this month, you pay next month, and $4 to play a $60 game sometimes is a mm-hmm. fine deal, I think.
Yeah.
The other thing that I think that is really important is you have to have that social aspect going. You have to have mm-hmm. the Google Hangout. Mm-hmm. You have to have the Skype call so that you can hopefully see faces and hear voices mm-hmm. and talk and laugh and all that good stuff, because otherwise you're going to miss out on the whole social dynamic of the game going on.
Is there even a text chat feature?
There is.
Okay,
they hide it in the corner, but it's there.
Okay.
So, you can even text chat, but, you know,
that's not as fun.
That's not as fun. Exactly right. There's a couple of alternatives I want to mention. Board Game Arena is the one that we tried. There's also Tabletopia, which was a Kickstarter for a long time, but it just came out. So I haven't had the chance to try it myself, so I couldn't really recommend it on the podcast. But Tabletopia looks like a more refined product, but a more expensive product than Board Game Arena, where Board Game Arena is a little fiddly. Mm-hmm. And like you said, like the board is sometimes just really, really small.
Mm-hmm.
You want a big, beautiful board. Tabletopia kind of allows for that, but it's a little bit more expensive to play the games compared to Board Game Arena, which is largely free. Tabletopia also just has more games. That's available on Steam. Also available on Steam is Tabletop Simulator, which is about $20. And it's basically just a physics program. There's a couple of games you can play. There's a couple of games you can buy. So you have to buy, like, per game, like $7 to buy Scythe or whatever you want to play. But there is a world of unlicensed content for Tabletop Simulator. If you want to play games that are just come out and you want to try them out, you can try them out. But bear in mind, no one's paying the license holders for this content. So you might want to stick to Board Game Arena or stick to Tabletopia. I use Tabletop Simulator. I use Board Game Arena for different things at different times. I'm excited to try Tabletopia, but they're all a little bit different. So maybe if you don't like one, you should try the other.
Mm-hmm. So for Tabletop Simulator, programmers can just create like e-versions of their game.
Just create a game. Just scan the game board and scan all the cards and load them in. And then it's a mod that you just download. And I can just download that game and I can play it. Like I say, there's a few licensed ones, but it's only like 12, something like that. Not even as many as Board Game Arena has. And it's got some basics. It's got like checkers and chess in it. Okay. But that one is a lot more of an experience where you're actually picking up pieces and moving them instead of, you know, click this, click that, and the pieces move on their own. You have to like shuffle cards and deal cards and lift them up and flip them over.
Yeah, because it's 3D. It's more. It's a lot more immersive, I would even say, because you're kind of it's kind of a top-down view on a 3D board, and all the pieces and elements can be manipulated. And you can, honestly, you can spawn or create anything on that board. It doesn't have to be all from a licensed game. It could be just little tokens, and you could make up your own game or something. It's probably great for testing games in that in that regard, like if you were a game designer.
How difficult would it be to create a game on it? Because there's some games that my family plays that, you know, just we have like paper cards for them. Would it be difficult to create a version of it?
I really have no idea.
I mean, I've used the game for Dungeons & Dragons, or the form of D&D I play, which is Dungeon World. And, I mean, you can create models. There's a whole, like, RPG pack. So you can create, not from scratch, but you can load into the game. There's a RPG kit that just has, like, three-dimensional models. But similarly, what I've done in that game, you can take links from a website or something. Maybe this is a little bit of know-how, but if you can link to it on the web, like let's say you know exactly where a photo is and you have a scan of your cards. Let's just say you have all your scans of your cards. You can make custom cards pretty easily. So I would say it's something that might take a little bit, like maybe it would take an afternoon to set up once, and then you create that save file and you can load it when you want to play the game. Like in the past, I've done something like I'll just create like a custom layout, or like I'll scan in a map or something, and then we'll just manipulate pieces on the board. Because I'll be playing this game, Dungeon World, I'll be playing it remotely with friends that are scattered. So I would say give it a try. It doesn't take too long to learn. There's a lot of features, but at its base, it's a very simple, simple game. I mean, a simple 3D game board that you get to create.
And how much was Tabletopia on Steam?
Tabletopia is has subscriber tiers. So it's free to download. You can download it. You can check it out. You can play some games. But then they'll get you somewhere down the line with you have to pay so much a month for this or that. But it's definitely free to try, free to download. So you can check it out, see if you like it or not before you start paying.
And how many games are available on Tabletopia?
Oh, I think in the hundreds. More than Board Game Arena, fewer than Tabletop Simulator, somewhere in there. Because it was a very successful Kickstarter, I know that. But I haven't had the chance to actually download it and try it myself. So if you like board games, I hope you like this podcast. It was all about Codenames and the Iron Throne. We threw in a video game in there. I love that, Mario Maker. But then if you're interested in playing online board games with friends and family maybe around the globe, BoardGameArena.com is well reviewed by us. And then Tabletopia and Tabletop Simulator, maybe you should try out on your own. That's it for the Pint and Click podcast. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and we'll see you next time.